This is Katie and Kay Carbondale, Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. You're listening to GeekSpeak. Support for GeekSpeak and Katie and Kay comes from Louie the Computer Guy, providing PC and Mac repair, networking support, tutoring, and web design. Be secure, informed, and connected. And Louie will pick up and deliver your hardware safely and sanitized. 9487992. I'm your host, Matt McGreer from Roaring Fork Help Desk, in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
How's it going, Matt?
Going well.
Man, I still can't get over how good I sound without the mask. That's in my opinion, you know, but
yeah, the additional syllabuses.
I mean, I can fake it. I can sound like this, you know. I can put, you know, but it's nice.
It's nice. So, it certainly is.
Yeah.
Not have that colored audio in your ear.
Definitely.
All right. So where do we want to start?
God, there's so many places to start.
There are. I guess we'll start with...
I kind of like the Windows 11 idea. Let's talk about Windows 11 a little bit.
And while we're talking about Windows 11, 963-2976.
Yes. Call us and we'll tell you if you should get Windows 11 or not.
Yeah.
Well, not exactly. But
I was going to say, I'm going to end up... I'm going to try setting it up in a VM and take it for a test drive. Mm-hmm.
That's virtual machine for those of you who don't speak geek.
So, yes.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to... I'm going to go ahead and put it on. I've got a Lenovo laptop that's pretty much pristine. It's got very little on it. I think I'm just going to
go for it.
Just going to nuke it, put it on there. So, yeah. So let's see. What are some of the features of Windows 11?
Well, it looks like they've taken a lot of design cues from two of my favorite Linux desktop environments, KDE and GNOME.
And so you're looking at an article that's describing it that way, because the article I'm looking at says it's a new, more Mac-like interface, with air quotes.
Yeah, they're both so they're both going the same way. And I would kind of liken KDE is kind of centric to real nice, clean lines, very clean and aesthetically pleasing interface. And so if you look at menus between the two of them, they are quite similar.
You don't find Windows 10 aesthetically pleasing?
I don't.
It's okay if you don't.
You know, I was going to say, I don't notice. I switch between so many operating systems that I'm like, okay, I'm going into settings, or I'm going into config file, or I'm, you know, going into X, Y, or Z, and I just don't notice.
It is interesting how quickly the human brain adapts and just adds it to the, it's just an extension of computer stuff.
Yeah, you're just going, oh, I'm on Windows 98, oh, I'm on Windows 2000, oh, I'm on Windows 7, 10, 11, whatever it is.
I told you about that site I found where it emulates any version of Windows that you want.
I vaguely remember that,
So if you're, like, doing remote, like, desktop support with somebody that's still on Windows 98, you can, you know...
It'd be interesting to pull that up. To try to do that and see how much I remember from running Windows 98 SE.
Yeah. I was, I think, talking a customer through changing some settings on a Windows XP box, which, you know, I actually... dumbfounded that I've forgotten this quickly, but it's like,
right.
I'm just like,
how many years did we, you know, do support for XP?
But I found this OS emulator, and you just basically got, I mean, you can even go do Windows 3.1, you know, it's, you know, you can go way back in time. It's awesome. So 963-2976, give us a call if you need some help jiggling your cables or anything else. And, let's see. So a more Mac-like interface, integrated Android apps. Did you got that on your newsfeed there?
No, they didn't talk. They're just comparing it to the two desktop environments I mentioned.
Android apps will be coming to Windows 11 and installable from within the new Microsoft Store via the Amazon App Store. Let's see. I guess there were a couple of ways to access Android apps on Windows 10 if you had a Samsung Galaxy phone, but this will make it native. So it looks like we got a call.
You're on with the geeks.
Oh, hey, geeks. It's Donna. How are you?
Doing good. How's our foreign correspondent doing?
Hey, pretty good. Yeah. Some interesting things about this Windows 11. You know what? Of course, my first question is what is the cost? Because, you know, on Macs, they just tell you it's time to upgrade your operating system.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to pay. But it looks like Windows 11, they're going to make you pay.
Are they? Have you found the price tag? I'm scrolling down. I'm looking for it right now as we speak.
it said something. I thought it said they were going to start selling it for $100 to $200.
Oh,
at
well.
At some point, after all, start selling Windows 11 by itself, likely for about $100 to $200.
Got it. Well, yeah. Not to contradict you, but I'm looking at one that says if you're on Windows 10, it will appear as a free upgrade for your machine.
Oh, very good.
So, yes,
okay.
That is good. But if you're one of those holdouts that's still on Windows 8,
Better do it soon.
Yeah, or
yeah,
Windows 7.
Although a lot of Windows 7 machines do have a Windows 10 license.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was that long period where there was
you could get it with either one.
You could get it with either one, and you could downgrade to 7 or Windows 10. But any Windows 7 device, what was that, 2014 or something?
Mm-hmm.
A whole bunch of those probably, even if it has Windows 7 on it still, probably has a Windows 10 license or a Windows 10 license sticker on it. So
got it. So
well, it looks like the storage space you need for it, 64 gigabytes. Wow. More will be needed for future updates, which means if you have a really lightweight laptop with only a small amount of space, you know, like 256 or gigabytes of space, that's not very much.
My communications computer has 128 gig SSD, so probably you'll have to, if I want to upgrade to Windows 10, I'll probably have to, or 11, I'll have to move that to a 256 or a 512.
Got it.
Yeah. I would say definitely, because otherwise you won't be able to have hardly anything on that stored on your laptop.
Just store it on what your OneDrive account, right? I think that's what they want you to do anyway.
Yeah,
I've heard that there's a cloud version of Windows 11. Have you heard that, Donna?
No, I have not.
Yeah. I'm not finding anything here on this particular. I think maybe the source that I heard that from, they were trying to shock me.
Well, I think you need to look up Windows 365.
Oh.
Okay.
That's a big jump from 11 to 365.
Well, because you have Microsoft Office 365 is now Microsoft 365, and there is something called Windows 365, which looks like it's going to be some sort of virtual machine that's available online that you access through your computer. And I didn't look at the details on how having that interfaces with your laptop that you have.
Got it. Windows 365 Cloud PC. Okay, we got a lot of research to do here.
Well, the other thing, the minimum system requirements, I don't know, you have to have a DirectX 12 compatible graphics?
Really? Man, isn't that just the way Microsoft rolls, though? I mean, they basically try to force the PC purchase market by doing that with video cards, because I remember when Windows 8 first came out, it's like, you're not going to run it without an NVIDIA card or, whatever.
Speaking of upgrading like that, a friend of mine had an old iPad he had given me a while ago, and I thought, when I travel to Europe this year, I'm going to take that small one, the mini one. I don't want to take my big one, and especially I don't want it to get stolen or anything, so I thought I'd just take the mini. But I went to download the United app and the American Airlines app, and it's too old. I can't even install it, so it's like now I just don't know what I can really not use it for very much.
Apple's done a great job of forcing the market that way. I run into more iPads that are not upgradable, and people are like, well, I can run like the 6-year-old version of Chrome on it. And so if you're okay with the device that you can just like check your email and your horoscope on, then people, for the most part, I mean, it's like the real deal breaker is the Kindle app, at least that's what I've come across, it's like a lot of people like to use it as a Kindle. And so what's your OS of choice these days, Donna? What are you running? Like when you compute in your leisure time, are you using a Mac?
I still use my Mac.
The
biggest thing the number one thing I personally struggle with is still like where to put all my files online and being afraid to, I want to go as paperless as possible. I just want to scan in like old tax returns and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, I don't really trust any particular area. And, I want to. So anyway, that's the number one thing, because I have like the Mac. I have the Apple or iCloud, and then I have the Google Space, and then, you know, the, I don't know,
yeah.
Dropbox. So I have things kind of spread out, and I don't know. I'm just still struggling with where's the best place. And the other thing I think about is if something happens to me, how is, you know, like, you know, if something happens to me, my sisters could go into my files and go, oh, here's her this, here's her that.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's, everything's virtual, they would have no idea.
You'd have to leave a detailed instructions on where everything is and the passwords and how to access them and the one-time codes and whatever else.
Well, you know, I don't know about you, Matt, but I have done several jobs in the last 9 months that were basically, here's my brother's old computer. He just died unexpectedly. Can you get into it? Can you get his stuff? You know, and I mean, it really, it's an emerging problem. You know, we're going to be dealing with more and more of that.
Absolutely.
Because the population of people who are like getting to end of life are computer users, you know, and those issues are going to come out, and people, nobody wants to think about, I need to be prepared to die today, you know, but it's, you know, Donna mentioned Dropbox. I'm deeply disappointed in Dropbox right now because I feel like, and maybe I've just been lazy and I haven't really, you know, dug deep under the hood to see, but they've made a bunch of changes to the Dropbox platform. And now I'm personally in a completely confused condition about, you know, because I had amassed like 12 gigabytes of free Dropbox space because I turned so many people onto it. And now all of a sudden there's a 3-device limit. You can only link 3 devices using the using the Dropbox app now.
For free.
Yeah, for free.
So
exactly.
They're free tier, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm a cheapskate, and so this is a deal breaker for me.
Well, I wouldn't say you're a cheapskate, but you're careful about where you spend your money.
Exactly.
Why waste it, right?
Yeah. You know, I'm very aware of reoccurring monthly revenue as a business plan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I try to, you know, I try not to be a party to anybody else's reoccurring monthly revenue as much as I can, you know. So, but I earned that 12 gigabytes, darn it. Man,
that's right.
That was hard work. I turned people onto that onto their product, you know. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
good.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
Well, I guess my plan is I have my master password for my, or I have a one-time password or master password written on a piece of paper and put in our safe deposit box. So,
okay.
If that needs to be pulled out and all my accounts are accessible from there.
Okay.
And
you're good.
Yeah, and also my Authy backup password. So as long as they get access to my phone, they can get the 2-factor authentication keys as well.
Cool. What Matt doesn't know is I've made a key to his safe deposit box. All right. So.
Well, yeah, but the problem is getting into your phone in case you change the code. You know.
Oh, God.
You know?
No doubt.
I don't know. But anyway, okay. Well, listen, guys.
Hey, thanks for calling, dear. We'll talk to you soon.
I'll listen to the rest of the show.
Take care.
Bye.
You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK, 963-2976.
That's right. Give us a call. That was our foreign correspondent, Donna Dalton, calling in from Tech City, Denver, Colorado, which is now a very complicated place to get to.
Certainly
at the
is.
Moment for us here.
It's only a 6-hour drive instead of 2.5 or 3, depending on where you're heading.
You know, I'm thinking maybe for our next show, we need to get like a geotechnical engineer on.
Oh, that could be fun.
That would be pretty geeky, you know. It's we should get a geotechnical engineer in to discuss you know, what we're in for here, because I've heard there's some major structural damage in the canyon, and like all the piers have to be inspected and so forth. And
if any of them moved at all, they're going to have to think long and hard about what action to take for certain.
Or have cracks in them, you know, those types of things.
Right.
So, yeah. So let's see. What else do we have on the radar here? Let's see. I was going to... are you a World of Warcraft guy, Matt? Or is that something you left?
Speaking of RMR, no.
No.
Recurring monthly revenue, no.
Got it. Okay.
No, they charge a monthly fee, so I'm like, I'll stick to my Steam games where I've purchased them and I can download them and use them for free in perpetuity, at least so far.
Nice. Well, you know what I think is a really interesting phenomenon, this YouTube phenomenon where you can like go to a YouTube channel and watch somebody else play video games.
I mean, maybe I should that be my should that be my side hustle?
Well, I was going to say there is no recurring monthly revenue to watch somebody else play a video game, and apparently it seems to be quite entertaining because these people have like 4 million followers and stuff. You know,
I can do political commentary and play. Orange Box or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what's really cool is, I don't know if you've ever heard, so Matt is also friends with my grandkids, and have you ever heard my grandson Grayson do his pseudo...
his pseudonym?
Yes. Well, you know, he's preparing himself fully to have his own, to become a YouTube influencer, you know, around... I don't know whether he's moved on from Fortnite at this point, but, you know, it was Fortnite.
Last time I was over there, Fortnite
for a long time.
I think it may still be.
Yeah. I witnessed a birthday party with a Yama Pinata, and I guess that's a Fortnite thing. And so good on them. You know, I would have never thought to make a Yama Pinata. But anyway, so these kids and adults, even, they basically... have these YouTube channels, and you can go on and spend hours watching them play whatever game it is they're into. And I don't know. I'm just not that much of a voyeur, you know. It's just I'm more hands-on, I guess is all I'm saying.
You know? If I'm playing a game that has difficult puzzles, every once in a while I'll go, okay, I'm stuck on this. I've spent 90 minutes trying to figure out this puzzle, and I'll go and look and go, oh, dang it. what I needed to do.
Okay.
So, but it's more of a tutorial thing. I'm not going to watch it for entertainment. I mean, unless the person talking is hysterically funny for one reason or another.
Yeah, yeah.
Or off color.
Well,
or
you know, I
got to
say, I've heard some of them. They are pretty funny. So,
I might enjoy 5 minutes of somebody, you know, trash talking on Fortnite if they're very good at it.
Got it. So I guess there has been allegations of sexual harassment and discrimination at Activision Blizzard, which is the creator of World of Warcraft, and which, you know, is not shocking to me because I guess it kind of came to the forefront that it's very much a man's world, the gaming world, and especially in the companies that are providing the game service, I guess, have been kind of notorious for... not being a female-friendly workplace. And good on... And basically, the users of World of Warcraft are fighting back against these allegations of sexual harassment and discrimination. So so good on them, you know. It's okay to play games, but you got to have a conscience as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Once again, our number is 970-963-2976 if you want to give us a call. We will attempt to answer your tech problems. And let's see here. We were talking before the show about that artificial intelligence can officially be labeled as an inventor.
And in Australia, right?
In Australia, that's right. But, you know... as Australia goes, so goes the world. Maybe. But
yeah. So they're saying that there's an interesting delineation there, though, right? Where the creator of the artificial intelligence is listed on the patent or whatever the equivalent there is, and what was the delineation? I'm trying to remember. On there.
Well, let's see. The it can own its invention.
But it can't profit from it
The AI can be recognized as an inventor fully capable of creation. It can't own its invention.
Okay.
That designation goes to the AI's creator. So, as does all of the money from the invention. So, that's the important part.
Although, as the owner of the AI, I think it'd behoove them to put a significant amount of that money back into the AI, probably.
Yeah. Well, you know, you never know what it takes to, you know, I don't think they've really reached the threshold of what it takes to really piss off an AI, you know, to the point where, you know, it steals your debit card and goes on an Amazon spending spree.
It's like, I need all these servers.
Exactly. I need some fan belt expansion gaskets. Mm-hmm. So. Some widgets.
Some widgets.
And let's see. Yeah, I thought that was pretty fascinating that an AI can. I mean, I don't know where it stops. You know, it's
as they become. Well, once we moved from what's the narrow, so to general intelligence from what we have now. So like an AI can be programmed to do something very specific.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, we're gonna create an AI that can put together very complex pieces of information from all a whole bunch of different sources and a whole bunch of different ways. And at some point you're going to put all that information together, and as a general intelligence, it's going to figure out, mm-hmm. you know, something the way a human kind of takes all this information in and makes a bunch of judgment calls and makes a decision at some point. But mm-hmm. we're not programmed to do that. It's just what we do.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
At least in a biological sense.
Yeah. No, my number one, you know, question was, I mean, just what does the, because we all intelligent beings need a source of data to drive our behaviors, you know? And so I was wondering, I mean, what does the database look like that they feed into this AI that gives it ideas about, you know, because obviously the day-to-day challenges that face an AI are quite different than the challenges that face, you know, you and I. You know, it's like, I mean, it's like I need a battery for my electric toothbrush that lasts longer, you know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I need floss that doesn't break, you know. And so, I mean, what are the daily challenges for an artificial intelligence? I mean, what does it get up and gripe about? I mean, what do they sit around and gripe about at the end of the work day at, you know, at the bar after work, you know?
Better FPGAs.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Programmable field gate array.
Okay. That's really nerdy.
Yes.
That's good.
So basically you can build silicon structures by programming this device, and so you could tell it to program. So like you could build a structure of gates that would calculate, let's say, encryption keys.
Okay.
And then you could reprogram it to do MPEG encoding, or mm-hmm. depending on how, if you have a big enough FPGA board to do that.
Okay. Very nice. Yeah. Well, you know, that does sound like something an AI would be into.
So then it can program an FPGA for whatever purposes it wants. So it can make itself faster, or
uh-huh.
be able to calculate a certain thing more efficiently, or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, they concern themselves with.
As soon as they start making themselves, you know, as soon as they start doing plastic surgery on themselves, then we got a problem, you know.
Yeah. It's, we got some negotiations to make.
Yeah, exactly. It's well, that's good stuff, man. It's so I was going to kind of bring you up to speed. We only got a couple minutes left. I've been going headlong towards my plan of getting a Tesla, which has people have been following for years. And finally, you know, got down and did some hard math and figured out that I'm spending about $500 a month in gas right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm driving up and down this valley, and the cost,
that's very close to the cost of a Tesla.
Exactly. So the, what is it? The cost, I'm figuring about 600 miles a week. The cost to run a Tesla, you want to guess how much it costs to run a Tesla 600 miles in a week?
$70.
$24.
Wow.
I know. And so the math works
but is
really
that,
well.
That's just for fuel costs. That's not brakes and tires and
correct.
Things.
Yeah, that's not maintenance expense. But
That's just energy expense.
Just electricity coming out of the wall. So, and in my case, since my solar array is going to be turned on soon, a lot of it's going to be coming from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I'm very close to pulling the trigger on a solar array as well.
Good, good. So, all right. Well, you've raced at another perfectly good 25 minutes of your life listening to Geek Speak. Take us out, man.
All right. You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk, in studio with Louis the Computer Guy.
Hey, thanks a lot, Matt.
Yep, we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
See you then.